Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
We have Laura Barron on the line. In this episode, I'm going to talk with one of Alabama's most powerful politicians, former Senator Laura R. Barron. Barron is a former Democratic politician, businessman, who was a member of the Alabama Senate and represented the 8th District since 1982. He was elected president pro tem of the Alabama Senate from 1999 to 2007, and after having served seven terms in the state Senate, was defeated by 628 votes in the 2010 general election. Barron represented Alabama's 8th Senate District, which includes all of Jackson County and parts of DeKalb and Madison counties. He was elected mayor of Fife in 1968, a position he held until 1982 when he was first elected to the Alabama Senate. After his first year in the Senate, he was not selected as a Democratic nominee. Subsequently, he waged the state's first and only successful write-in campaign for the Alabama legislature and won the Democratic nomination. He encouraged people to write in Laura Barron with the itty-bitty pencils which his campaign distributed, and his writing campaign still stands as one of the most successful in American history. While the Senate district contained three counties, DeKalb, Jackson, and parts of Madison, he received write-in votes in 26 of Alabama's 67 counties. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Very good, Marcus. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'm just sitting out here dodging my own things. Like I said, you had to dodge that, that indictment where you defeated it. I just had two, people sending viruses and stuff like that. Little bitty stuff, people aggravate you when they see you trying to doing good, like I've seen, like what happened to you out there. First of all,
yes,
I want to ask you about, how's your recovery coming from the tractor accident?
My recovery is coming fine, but now you're just a little bit garbled the phone. Can you talk more into the your mouthpiece or whatever you're doing? I'm struggling to hear you. That sounds better. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, it does.
Okay. Yes, I was just concerned about your recovery because the picture looked pretty bad. The brace you had on your neck, it was looking pretty bad. So
well,
I was just
thank you very
how
much.
Recovery comes along with that.
Thank you. My recovery is coming good. I flipped the tractor over on me several times in November of 2012, and I stayed in a halo and a neck brace for 6 months, either in a wheelchair or with a walker, and they were not sure how much paralysis I'd have or if I'd be able to walk again, but it all is working out good. My neck is still a little stiff. I'm still doing therapy, but I am doing marvelously well. And thank God my mind is still good enough that I understand what is going on. Of course, a lot of my opponents when I was in office always questioned whether or not my mind was very good ever. I understand. I've been there and I've done the things that they're doing, and it is very upsetting to watch the mess that they're perpetrating on the people today. But anyway, I'm doing my health is good. Thank you for asking.
And that's great, and thank God, that you're going to be okay eventually and continue the rehab on that. But just like you was just saying, I know it's got to be disheartening to you to see this terrible mess that we got going on down there in Montgomery. I mean, it's just bad, and I was discussing with some people, and we all were saying to ourselves, it seems like once they pull their shenanigans over on Don Siegelman, it seems like they turn their attention to the next powerful man in Alabama. It's like they're trying to make sure that all the powerful Democrats are some way marred or scarred from ever, you know, coming back and helping the people. And I just wanted to say that I was glad you defeated that. And, hey, you're 2-0. But I can understand you wanting to be out of this thing. I mean, who knows what they'll trump up next.
Well, that's and I was advised not to come on your show today, but even some of my family. And I said, listen, you know, those people took their best shot at me, and it didn't. They didn't hit anything. They investigated me for 2.5 years and spent millions of dollars, and they couldn't even get their case to trial on me. It was so flimsy. It was awful. So I'm delighted to be back in the arena, and I want to let people know that we're dealing with some very unscrupulous people that are elected in office today.
Yes, we are. And like you said, they spent millions of dollars. And I can understand your family and friends' concern as well, because look at the war chest they had against Siegelman. I mean, they had $20 million to work with. And like I said, they can buy a whole lot of district attorneys and judges and award contracts and things like that. Just, you know, yes, you survived that, but always be aware, because I promise you they haven't stopped digging.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's better to be in the fight like you're in now than sitting on the sidelines, you know.
Well, but because many of them are crooks, they think that everybody else is a crook. And just because you hold office doesn't mean you're a crook. I'm the same businessman and family man and father that I've always been, and being a crooked person was not in my repertoire. My sweet mama, God rest her soul, she would have beat me to a pulp if she'd ever thought. She caught me one time stealing a watermelon, me and my first cousin, from my uncle. And she made me tuck a quarter over to his house and go up to the front door and pay him. And that was the biggest whipping that I ever took for doing something that was illegal, was to pay my uncle a quarter for a watermelon that we were just young kids and 8 or 10 years old, and we thought he had a whole field of watermelons. We thought he wouldn't miss one. But it was the principle, teaching you not to steal.
A valuable lesson.
Very valuable lesson. And that's the kind of lessons that they taught. Nowadays, parents don't do the strong discipline. My mother didn't spare the rod. My dad left when I was a young kid. I was raised by a very religious, wonderful mother. And she instilled in me values that I still have today. One, I've never drunk alcohol in my life. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. I just don't do those kind of things. Mr. Jimmy, I'm going to be on the telephone for about 1 hour. So I think if you want to take that off the truck, just take it off up there and use the truck and do what you want to. Marcus, I'm sorry. I had to take care of a little.
That's okay. You're very busy and important person. I'm just glad to have you on the show. Like you said, you was taught a very valuable lesson about them not sparing the rod. And this sort of, I think now, is some of the problem we got here. There's so many laws where you can't even discipline your child biblically. And it just seems like it's just setting kids up to overrun their parents to fill the prison system, which in Alabama is a mess. Can you tell us about the mess that you see concerning Alabama's prison industrial complex?
Well, the prison system is a mess, and it's a mess. It's never been great. Now, when we as Democrats were in, and I want to preface this, well, I was in the leadership, the very top leadership in the Senate for many, many years, so budgeting and whatever transpired, I either had the ability to say yes or no, and usually for the last 12 or 15 years, that carried great weight, and oftentimes it was the final weight. But the prison system has always in this state been a problem, but the folks down there now that stormed the state house, as they call it, to do great things, and it appears that they're doing great things in the wrong direction to me. In fact, they are going in the wrong direction. They begin cutting back everything, and they cut the prison system back, and now, and we have people in, at least the prisons are overcrowded to the extent of our prisons were designed to hold about 15,000 people. And they've got up in the 30,000s of people in the prisons today, and they're not funding. They're not building any new prisons. They're not expanding the new prisons. They're just stacking beds higher in warehouses and warehousing people. And federal courts have made it very clear that that's not acceptable. They don't have a choice. If they continue on the path they're on right now, the federal courts will take over the prison system. They did it back under George Wallace. And when they do, they design a prison system that will cost this state hundreds of millions of dollars. So they better get their act together or the federal court will get it together for them.
Yes, I would like to see, as for myself, I would like to see, well, I would like to see a couple of things. Let me get your take on it. Number one is a little more community corrections, you know, but nobody wants that in their community. But it does show, evidence does show that that can work. That the problem is getting that community to accept those halfway houses and other places. And number two is, all the, it seems like it's now just lock them up, throw away the key, forget about them. What happened to all the programs that was teaching these inmates some skills that they could, when they get out, they might have a carpenter's license or upholstery license or something like that, and they don't have to return to some of the ways in life that they was living. Because when they get out, what a lot of people don't realize, they take into account, because somebody made a mistake, you're for, most of the time, you're going to be forever barred from voting again, so you're barred from affecting the political process. I mean, what kind of life is that for an American? Number two, it's going to be very hard for you to get a job, so where are you going to live? Number three, it's going to be hard for you to get housing. A lot of times, you can't get housing with these felonies. It's like they're creating a situation where that person will return.
Well, this is a vicious cycle. And it starts much earlier than prisons, than when these people reach prisons. It starts down in grade school, and when you have a Republican bunch that wants to cut out so-called government funding to education, cutting back education, then we're going to increase the numbers significantly in this state in the next few years. And because of the actions that we're taking today, or they're taking, cutting back education. The education budget has been cut back significantly. When we were there, the education budget reached about $8 billion annually. Today, it's just slightly over $5 billion. Well, $3
billion. And they're trying to raid that.
They're not trying. They are raiding that. They raided it.
Yeah.
They have raided it and started this program that Governor Riley has been pushing. And it's all, and call it the Accountability Act. All it is, it's a program to fund private schools, the academies. North Alabama, we don't have many private schools because we don't. There's not a significant minority population in Alabama, but South Alabama is basically all academies and private schools. All those people were paying for their kids to go to private school. And now that they passed this so-called Accountability Act, all those people will go, their education at private schools will be paid for directly out of the Education Trust Fund. That'll cost tens and tens of millions of dollars. Those are dollars that won't go to public schools, which were underfunded already, will be siphoned off and go to private schools. I think private schools are fine, but if you want to send your kid to a private school, you should pay for it. The taxpayer
exactly.
shouldn't be paying for you to send your kid to a private school. The taxpayers only should have to pay for kids going to public schools. But now this bunch has got in there, and they're attacking public education from every angle because they don't believe in public education. They won't send. They're the elite rich crowd, and they send their kids to private schools. So therefore, they won't. Poor taxpayers to pay for their kids going to private schools. It's just wrong. It's criminal. It's what it is.
And you hit the nail on the head when you said that. That is exactly correct, which leads us into this this next thing I want to talk to you about is how, you know, just like former Governor Sigmund was attacked about the education lottery. What do you think about, first of all, an education lottery, and what are some ways, I don't know if yours match up with his or some of the ones they're trying to propose now with the Porch Creek Indians. What would first of all, do you support an education lottery? Second of all, if you had to help structure that thing, what would be some of the main things that you would want to see in there?
Well, I want to first say that my mother taught me not to gamble. Consequently, I don't drink, smoke, gamble, and never have and never will. Those are just values that I hold dear that I gained from my sweet Christian mama. But I'm not naive enough to think that people are not going to drink alcohol, so I never had a problem with letting people vote on alcohol sales. I passed the bill, so let them vote on it. I voted to allow alcohol in my community and my counties. I support that. If people want to drink alcohol, they should have the right to do that. If they want to gamble, they ought to have the right to do that in this state. I see nothing wrong with the lottery. In fact, I helped Governor Sigmund pass the lottery that we allowed people to vote on. When he was in office, I thought it was a very progressive policy program, and the voters of the state didn't show much wisdom, and they turned down the lottery. I think it was a very unwise decision by the voters, but our voters have made some very unwise decisions. I believe in the one man, one vote system and letting people, the majority rule. I always believe in the Biden with that, but that don't mean I always have to agree with the majority. I think they've been wrong many, many times. I think they've been wrong recently with electing pig-headed people to office that are doing some very destructive things. But I think the we ought to be in this state be making money off of we should have some casinos. I think Dale Marsh's program is a pretty good program. He's a former Republican colleague, and he's now pro tem of the Senate. I think that's a pretty good program. I think the one that Mike Hubbard, Speaker of the House, is proposing, it doesn't smell right to me to give the Indians, they already have a monopoly on all the gambling because Bob Riley illegally shut down all the other dog track bingo parlors. And it was commonly known that Bob Riley took tens of millions of dollars in campaign money from the Mississippi Indians. Therefore,
yeah.
it was in the best interest of the Mississippi Indians to shut down their competition in Alabama. But I don't see anything wrong. We have gambling in many places in this state that's legal. The Indians do. And they don't pay one single dime of tax on anything that they, any gambling or anything that they buy or sell on those on the reservation lands. I think that they should open it up, and we should have bingo. We should have table games. A couple of three casinos in this state, one on the coast, one in Birmingham, maybe one in Huntsville. And maybe four or five, they could bring in hundreds of millions of dollars a year. They don't want to raise taxes. They think that's a terrible thing. Well, they're going to have to do something because they've done such a terrible job of managing the resources that we left them. Now, I can tell you right now, we balance the budget every year, and we never borrowed from every account that's down there to balance the budget like this bunch has. Governor Bentley, he claims he saved $1 billion. Well, that's just an unadulterated untruth. Nothing true about that. The general fund budget is only about $1.4 billion. If he'd saved $1 billion, we'd have a huge surplus in this state rather than the deficit we had. This bunch, in the 5 years they've been down there, they have borrowed somewhere about $2 billion. And I'm not down there, but I did budgets. I was intricately involved. And let me explain to you and the public what I'm saying. Uh-huh. They raided the oil and gas trust fund for about $450 million, seemed like exactly about $437 or $40 million. So they used that to balance the budget. Then they raided the two rainy day funds that we Democrats set up that were funded. They took out all the money from the rainy day funds, and all of that amounts to about $750 million. Now all of this is to balance their budgets. But before last election, Governor Bentley, he floated a half billion dollar road bond. In other words, he borrowed $500 million from Wall Street by floating the bond issue. And that was so they could get started building roads before last election to get reelected. So those two pots is like $1.3 billion that they borrowed that is very apparent. Now they've borrowed other monies, but all of this was to balance their budget. We never borrowed, as Democrats, we never borrowed money one single solitary time to balance the budget. We always figured out Roger Bedford, for the last number of years, Senator Bedford was the budget chair.
Great man.
And he did a fantastic job of directing and saving and helping balance the budget without raising taxes or without borrowing money. This bunch and you never did hear Democrats propose raising $700 million worth of taxes. The last major tax that has been that was raised in this state was proposed by Governor Guy Hunt. It was a 5-cent gas tax. I supported it. I helped Governor Hunt pass it because the road, the transportation system was so broke, we had to have some money. But that's the last major tax. So all of this garbage that they talk about, Democrats being a bunch of tax and spend and raising taxes, just not true. The next time that they talked about raising a bunch of taxes, guess who it was? Wasn't a Democrat governor. It was Bob Riley, Amendment 1. something over $1 billion he proposed raising and put it on the ballot, let people vote on it. Of course, they voted it down overwhelmingly. But now these are just examples to show you
that vote down. Part of that vote down was due to I don't think that the Democrats had an effective enough counter argument when it was all out there. It's just like, hey, we're going to put it on the table. That's it. And meanwhile, they didn't keep their foot on the pedal, explaining exactly all the good things that could have came out of it. While Republicans were hammering hard. Yeah, I'm talking about the one that you and Governor Sigmund worked on that y'all put
on the lottery.
That got defeated.
Well, I agree with you. Let me tell you, I think Governor Sigmund, along with us, I helped pass it. I helped push it through the Senate and the legislature. I think a mistake. We made a mistake. It wasn't explained as well as it could be, and I don't think that the how it was to be operated was as clear as it should be. But the Mississippi Indians spent millions of dollars to defeat it. They came in and brought millions of dollars in and put ads and other gambling interested didn't want Alabama to have a lottery. So they put out many untruths and misinformation about it.
And that's what always puzzled me about this. What always puzzled me and a lot of others about this is the man who was in between all this money shuffling, Jack Abramoff. I mean, he flat out told exactly what happened in his book, but you don't hear much about it. And his book's still going to be bought today, and he's telling you exactly how they war gamed former Governor Sigmund with a $20 million war chest.
And it's not only in his book; it came out in congressional hearings, in Congress.
Yeah.
All of this is public records. Anybody that questions it came out. Senator McCain was one of the leaders that did the investigation that brought out all this corruption of the Mississippi Indians and other Indian. Abramoff was taking money from a lot of Indian gambling interests and funneling it into areas to help defeat Democrats and let people like Bob Riley. Bob Riley got millions of dollars, and his money was cleaned up and hid. They ran it through the National Republican Governors Group and various national groups. They cleaned the money up, the gambling money. They'd give it to the Republican Governors Group or various other groups, and then that group would send the money to the Alabama Republican Party. It was just a big corrupt mess.
Eventually find its way back home to Raleigh.
And the voters just, they were confused by all the advertising. But, see, that was pretty revolutionary back then. You know, that was pretty new. And even most of this state was dry. We didn't even have alcohol back then. So it takes voters a long time to begin to accept change.
This was going to be one of my last questions, but by you saying that, I'm going to have to ask you this right now. What advice would you give to people like me at the grassroots level when it comes to educating the voters about the issues? Because I tell you a problem that I see in the Democratic Party as an African American. The Democratic Party in Alabama, and this is an assessment because I've been a campaign manager, I've worked on politics, I've blogged for a long time, I've held sort of like college political offices. I've always been involved in this. And my assessment is that the Democrats, they're like sticking to the regular same old folks. They're not reaching back down to the people in the communities who's gonna be in their community every day telling people how important this or that issue is. It seems like the Democrat just comes in and gives the old name or the routine person the funds or whatever support to go out there at election time, when what you really need is someone who's always in the grassroots, who's always trying to educate the voters about these issues. I mean, Democrats are doing too much of this last minute stuff. You know what I'm saying? They don't have concrete boots on the ground continually like Republicans. And that's their problem. They operate in cycles. And when we're in a fight like we're in now, you can't operate in cycles. Operating in cycles is what got you the supermajority down in Montgomery. And that's my problem with the Democrats. They need to, some of the people that have led the African-American community for a while, that's good and all. And this is something funny I say, and a lot of African-American politicians get upset when I say this, but I'm going to always say it. It's a good thing that happened, you know, with the Selma to Montgomery March and all that. We can't continue to accept African-American leaders simply based upon that they marched with King. And I say, okay, you marched. You should be tired, pass the baton to the next energetic generation so we can move the ball forward. Because at the grassroots, I see a lot of people don't want to get involved with politics. So the first thing they say is, we got these same old people, and they don't come around until election time. And there's so many new ideas out there that nobody's out there pushing. That's why they're never ready for nothing new, because they haven't been primed and educated about what's coming. It goes back then, even during the lottery, I had a lot of African-American people that was talking bad about it because they believed the hype that was out there. So I was just asking, want to ask you, and to keep in mind things that we can do at the grassroots level to help keep the base fired up. I mean, what happened to Sigma, it just seemed like it demoralized us as a party. Everybody, like I said before, everybody took and ran into the corners and ran back down off in their holes. And I'm saying now we're gonna rally for Sigma and everything that the Democrats believed in. And I just want to invite the Democrats again, come on out. It's safe to come out of your corners, safe to come out of your holes. Let's get back in the fight. So what would you say a person can do at the grassroots level to help keep the fire stirred up?
Well, Democrats are at this time very disorganized, and a lot of it is because for 137 years we were the majority party, and it was all the South knew and all the state knew was being Democrat. When I got elected in 1982, there were only two Republican senators out of 35 in Alabama State Senate. So everything was strong with Democrats. But as that began to change, Democrats, we have not adapted and changed and realized that we didn't realize early enough, and we don't realize now what a battle we have with Republicans. And Republicans have got two things going for them that they utilize so well against or for to win elections and against Democrats. They've got God. It's more than two things, but God and guns and race. They play the race card, and this state is so racist. We don't admit it, and I'm a white man, but I'm among it all day long. There's so much racism in there.
I mean to cut you off, and I want you to finish your point, but I also want to say, too, since you said that, as a black person, I see race too. You know, I got some black friends, and like you said, I'm among it. And I have to try to tell them, you know, I've seen, and I tell people all the time, I've seen some racist black people that's just as racist as some white people. But go ahead and finish your point.
Well, see, I think that's true. And we need to do things that bring us together rather than divide us, because, you know, house divided, it doesn't stand. You can't move forward, but But the Republicans do a great job of using the gun issue and the God issue. And consequently, you're talking about grassroots. The Republicans have a great grassroots organization, and that's the churches. Oh, my God, it's unbelievable. Now, the black people for years have used the churches somewhat in their politics, and it's been a part of the black culture of politics. Now, when I got elected in 82, religion and politics, it was a big no-no. You didn't do that. And consequently, I never did that. But every year I began seeing more and more Republicans utilizing the church. And today, the churches are just training grounds. And the area that Republicans call on, mixing church or religion and politics, I think the two should be separate. I feel strong about it. This country was created because people were fleeing England to get away from the Church of England dominating government, dominating their lives, and we set up
exactly.
An independent, and here we are. We're moving back in direction. If we continue moving in this direction as strong in the next 25 years as we have the last 25 or 30 years. I mean, it's dangerous today. How much religion there is in politics, and people claiming that you should only listen to God's law instead of the Constitution and the law of the land. Well, so many times the problem with God's law is what some ignorant preacher decides he wants it to be. I mean, he's the one that. Claims that he's speaking for God. And I was raised in the most primitive, holiness religion where they handled snakes and all that. And the preachers in my church, they were so ignorant they couldn't pronounce the words in the Bible, but yet they tell you how to live your lives, and people were scared to death. If they didn't do just exactly what Reverend Land said do, or they was going to go to hell and burn. I mean, they just use the fear factor, and the Republicans are with the fear factor and great with the religious church factor, steering the people into the polls to vote against them ungodly Democrats. And there's
and
nothing further from
exactly
the truth about Democrats.
Yeah, I was telling the person, especially here in Lawrence County, you know, we had a vote, here in Lawrence County, we had a wet and dry issue. And I don't know why, but they only had it in two cities out of the whole county. The rest of the cities didn't get it. And we have Jack Daniels over there in Hillsborough, in the city of Hillsborough, in a dry city. But someone told me that it's the same way in Tennessee. But to me, it's kind of odd to have Jack Daniels Distillery, or where they're making the barrels at least, to be in a dry place. And every time that issue comes to Lawrence County, the church folks come out in full force talking about how bad it is. Well, I always tell them, hey, the first miracle just Jesus performed was turning the water to wine. So, you know, you have that dilemma going on right there. And then somebody, and back to the gambling. Also with the gambling, some people were saying, well, the gambling's bad as this and that. I said, well, hey, Moses and the Israelites, hey, they cast lots for land. The same thing as gambling. But the reason why, and I'm not going to lie, even when I was a young man out doing things, so like I said, I'm grassroots, I stopped playing dice, shooting dice, in college when, someone's another religious guy. I had a religious roommate, and he was like, do you know they shot dice for Christ's clothes? And after he pointed that out to me, it kind of scared me. I haven't shot dice since the college days. And wouldn't. But back to this, we're talking about the religious folk. A guy was telling me, well, I've been called to preach. I said, well, hey, I wasn't there, so I don't know who called you. I'm just going to read my Bible. I'm not going to depend on a person. I'm not going to depend on a person sitting up there. You know, I came to church and come to church to hear the word, but, you know, I have to study and read myself. I'm not going to let the religious people, like you said, they have their own interpretation, you know, of what it says. And a lot of times people will use it for their fear. You're going to burn, you know, and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that really scares people. It really scares people. And another thing I was going to ask you is, we was talking about the Democrats disorganized. What do you think that they can do? Now, I was in Alabama political reporter, that newspaper, probably maybe a year ago, and I was calling on Kennedy and Reid to try to squash this, whatever is going on, try to fix it, because we got a bigger problem. We need to end this infighting, because we got a much bigger problem. I mean, the Republicans are loving this divided Democratic Party. And the leaders at the top, they need to see this, that we're never going to win, and I don't think we're ever going to get back on track until we come together for a common cause. It can't be individualistic like what's going on now. We got to have a common cause, and I think that common cause would be the issue with Don Sigelman and the issue with what they tried to do to you. And we need to find some unifying issues and come together on those issues instead of being apart and broken because of a few personal, you know, personality conflicts. So what do you think the Democratic Party can do to take a step forward in solving this problem? And I had proposed a conflict resolution meeting between the two, and, you know, I heard some positive things on, and I'm going to be honest, I heard some positive things on the Kennedy side, but it was sort of like the Reid side didn't even want to touch it, didn't even want to talk about it. It was that type of attitude that I think that just basically African-Americans can do without on the part of response that I got on that. So what do you think the Democratic Party in Alabama can do to start to mend this rift?
Well, it would have to start with Joe Reid. Joe has run basically the Democrat Party for the last 35 years, and his word goes. He was the one calling the shots when they kicked me out of the party in 1983. And so he was that strong then, and he's that strong today. Dr. Reid is going to need, Dr. Reid needs to be willing to open up the party, expand the leadership. And he won't admit that. And he kind of runs it as his own little
fiefdom.
Personal fiefdom, and I like Dr. Reid. He and I get along very well. I'm not putting him down. He's done a lot of good, but today, without opening up the party and accepting a broader leadership group than we have, the party is going to stay stagnant like it is today. And Dr. Reid needs to not be the strong man, and the only leader and the only voice. In other words, he's in a dictatorial position of the party. Whatever he says goes. In fact, he was for kicking me out of the party in 1983, and he did. I mean, all he had to do was. I was at that meeting when they kicked me out. He said, voting against me, he made them stand up. He wouldn't let them vote a secret ballot. He wouldn't let them hold their hand up. He wanted to, and he was up on a big stage so he could look, and he'd chastise them if they didn't vote.
Exactly.
With him, and
he was going to retaliate against the one that they knew it.
Retaliate, and that's a problem.
I never backed down from saying that. I said this long before I've talked to you, long before I've had this channel, back when I was in Madison County writing grassroots newsletters, that Joe Reid is sort of like a lot of people we got in the African-American community, because I'm coming from my own, you know, perspective, and coming from an African American grassroots situation. While I'm addressing our own African American issue, I know we're one part. It's not about race, but I and the others feel like we got to clean up some of our own business before we can really get into it. And Joe Reed just needs to do the honorable thing. He doesn't want to do it. At some point, you got to realize that you need to bring on new voices. You need to bring on new people. That you need to, just like you just said, you need to open up. And for him to act like that, he's actually doing more damage to the black community than he is helping. And a lot of people get confused. They feel like, okay, we don't have that many seats at the table, so we don't need to criticize the only one we got. That's crap. If you got that type of leadership, you better fix it. Don't be content just because we got this figure person at the head of it. And so, and those people, they're like Joe Reed. They use that as a way to stay in power. Well, I'm the only one. I've been doing it for 32 years. I did this and that. He needs to do the honorable thing and just move on. Let history take its course. Let the future come in and stop being this dictatorial, you know, person that's unreachable. I mean, he fits all the classic things, and that's why I posted, you know, even on my Facebook page, I posted the reason why Joe Reed is in trouble. He fits the profile of a leader in trouble. Number one, he has a poor understanding of people. Number two, he lacks imagination. Number three, he passes the buck. Number four, he will not take a risk. Number five, he has no team spirit. And number six, he fights change. Seven, he feels secure and satisfied. Eight, and a lot of people know this. I don't know him personally, but I've been told some things. Number eight, he flies into rages. And I've seen this one. He's insecure and defensive, and he stays inflexible. Joe Reed fits all of those classic signs, those classic profile signs of a leader in trouble. And he needs to do the honorable thing. He needs to be, he should pass on the leadership or take a back seat. Take a back seat. I mean, it's just a lot of arrogance. And what's wrong with our African-American leaders is they want to take their positions to the grave. They want to, you know, it's going to be on your obituary, but do you have to take it to your grave? So, yes, I wish they could sit down and he open up and they can try to solve this rift that's going on, so we can get down to business. Because like you said, we're fighting a well-oiled, well-financed machine that's always turning,
No question about that. They are much better organized than we are, and they've got the churches behind them. They've got the religious movement behind them. You know, the Republicans got very smart. They couldn't win elections because when I grew up in my earlier years in politics, only the rich folks were Republicans. Well, there wasn't enough of them. They couldn't win elections because there's not enough rich folks. But then they figured out to tie the churches and the religious crowd in with the money crowd. And that gives them the numbers to win elections. And they've done a marvelous job of scaring the daylights out of people and keeping people scared that they're going to go to hell if they vote Democratic or the Democrats are unchristian and all that kind of stuff. They've done a marvelous job. We've not done a good job as Democrats. And they just demonize the word liberal. Liberal up in the dictionary, and liberal is such a good word. It means you're caring, you're sharing, you're giving, you're helping your fellow man, you're doing all the things that a Christian person should be doing. Conservatives are doing just the opposite of that.
Yes, and the main thing you're doing as a liberal that falls in line, really, the main thing I see that liberals do to fall in line with biblical teaching is not judging people. You know, save
right.
that and leave that to God. Let God do that part. And that's the main
that's
thing
right.
that they're going against. And so and I just want to touch on this one more time. The voter apathy that I see here in Lawrence County and the state as a whole is directly related, the African-American voter turnout and apathy is directly related to our leadership. And I defy any of them. Anybody can come on my show, African-American leaders, and talk about this, but they won't because they know the numbers are on my side. Explain to me how we have these numbers that's not making it to the polls. You can't blitz. They're running out of excuses what to blame it on. The real problem is they need to look at themselves, the reason why black people are not showing up to the polls. And, of course, it's to their benefit if they do. But we see so much happening with people that are inflexible, I agree, and people here in this county, leaders we got here in this county, that are not listening to the African-American community until it's election time. And that's why you're not getting the turnout you're getting. Any other excuse they're making is just hogwash. They need the voter apathy and turnout needs to start with them. Once they fix that and the Democrats solve their inner problems, we can win this state again.
Yes, I concur with you 100%. Befuddles me to watch poor people, middle-income people, voting Republican against their interests. They're voting for the money class, the rich people, and why on earth that they want to do that? Most of it's out of ignorance. They just don't know. They're ignorant. They watch Fox News, and Fox News is just a lying channel, misleading news. So it's not even news. It's not news. It's just propaganda.
You're right about that. A lot of people don't realize they actually won a court case saying that they don't have to tell the truth. They want a case that they don't have to tell the truth. So I don't even understand why some of their base would even watch that. They fought to tell you lies.
It's unbelievable. Here, this network is owned by an Australian, Rupert Murdoch, and he's making billions and billions of dollars a year.
Don't forget about the Saudi sheikh who owns part of it, too.
One of the Saudi princes.
Some of the same people who attacked us, not him particularly, but some of the same people that attacked us on 9/11 came from Saudi Arabia, and Fox is partly owned by Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely. They all came from it. But he's just playing on the fear of ignorant, uneducated people. But, boy, they believe in that, and they will fight you at the drop of a hat. If you disagree with what the Fox News has said, because they believe 200% everything that Fox News said, and about 60 or 70% of everything Fox News says is untrue. It's just not true.
Hey, I'm gonna take this quick break. I know you said you had about an hour, and according to that, we have about 10 more minutes left. I'm going to come back and let you wrap up anything you want to say, or we can keep going. But I'm going to take this short break. And the main thing I want to ask you, I can tell you're glad to be away from that mess in Montgomery, Alabama. But I'm going to ask you when I come back, what are you doing? How can people help you to do what you want to do? I know you're back in this fight. I don't know about political office, if you plan to come out of retirement or what, but when we come back, I want you to tell us what people can do and what you're interested in so we can follow you and support you what we're doing. So I'm going to take this quick break. And a lot of people don't like this song right here because a lot of people got a different meaning for it, but I love this song. So we'll be right back after this break with Laurel Barron.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back. We're bringing voices to power where we're talking with Senator Laura R. Barron. Barron is a former Democratic politician and businessman who was a member of the Alabama Senate and represented the 8th District since 1982. He was elected President Pro Tem of the Alabama Senate from 1999 to 2007. Okay, we're back. And I was just going to ask you about, you know, what you have for the future and how people can keep up with you and see what you're doing. You're one of the best we've got. That's why I also want to encourage you to keep your lawyers on speed dial and stay in the fight, because it seems like every time we get a good politician, powerful politician, they're gunning for them.
Well, that's the Republican operation, and that's their motive, is to try to put somebody down. We as Democrats, Democrat philosophy is, instead of trying to build yourself up by shoving someone down, I believe we need to build ourselves up by lifting everybody up. I'm talking about poor people, middle-income people, rich people. I'm not opposed to rich people making money. I like to make money, and I've done pretty well because I'm a businessman. I've started a number of businesses and have a number of very successful businesses now, and have all my life. So that's the American way. I'm very supportive of capitalism. I think it's a good thing, but in doing that, we need to lift all boats. And I grew up really, really poor, so I understand about being poor, and I haven't forgot that. So we need to try to lift everybody instead of doing like a bunch of Democrats, a bunch of Republicans, and shoving some people down and only lifting the rich up. Now, talking about grassroots, every county where Democrats in every county and in the cities, but you can do it better by county. We need we're doing a grassroots thing here in DeKalb County that's very, very successful. And there in various groups around the state, and we're beginning to come together and have some unity. But this doesn't include it's got nothing to do with the state party. The state party is disorganized at this time, so we're going to have to do our organizing at the very grassroots level. What we've done here in DeKalb County, John Baker, he's a former senator and a great citizen here in the county, worked for Southern Railroad for years in Montgomery and has moved back to DeKalb County, but was a senator from DeKalb County back in the 60s here, maybe back in the 70s it was. But he called me, and he's gotten a group of us together, and what he explained, and this is a problem. Local Democrats now have a problem having getting funding because the Republicans have shut off the funding sources for Democrats. Well, we have organized in this county, we a small group of us initially, and we put up, we pay a fee, an annual fee to belong to this, we call it the Jefferson Jackson Club, here in this county. And we decided we could afford $500 a year, the group that met, and all this money would go to fund local Democrats, strictly from DeKalb County, the next time that we have an election cycle. Well, lo and behold, we have reached 60 members that have already paid $500 apiece. That's going to give us every 2 years $60,000 to spend and help local Democrats. Well, this was purely our effort. Everybody doesn't have to follow this. Over the Mountain Democrats down in Jefferson County, they're doing that. Well, they came and spoke to some of them spoke to our group. We meet once a month. We have lunch once a month. But I encourage Democrats throughout the state in each county, they need to begin start small and have a Democrat breakfast once a month, or a Democrat lunch, or a Democrat dinner once a month. And let it be everybody pay their pay for their lunch or breakfast, and then begin talking among ourselves how we think we can best help Democrats in that local area. We've got to start local.
That is a great template, and
see, then once we get strong enough in each county, then we can begin coming together in unity. But we've got to start grassroots in our county and communities. And it's surprising. I never dreamed, we started this group just a little over a year ago. I never dreamed that we'd have 60 people in DeKalb County that would pay $500 a year to support Democrats. And I don't know where it's going in. We thought we might get 20. We're at 60, and it's still growing. So I don't.
That is a great template, like you said. It should be. Yeah, it's a great template, and like you said, it should be taken to every county. And I'm gonna, like I said, I'm gonna reshare this and inform people about it, to, you know, contact you about it, you know, so they can get
they
it going.
They can contact me.
We need that here.
Well, I'll be glad to come. I'll speak to their group. If they'll get a group of 10 or 15 people together, I'll be glad to come speak to their group in various counties. We'll have other members from our club that will come speak. It doesn't have to be $500. We may have a poor county, people that can't afford five. What if it's $100? What if it's $50? Organizing and meeting together and discussing ideas. We have a speaker every month to talk about Democrat ideas. And from each one, we get some new ideas. We get new energy. We leave those meetings so fired up and just full of good feelings because we've fellowship with people that we love, good Democrats that we trust and we've known a long time. And that's the way we grassroots and start this thing and get it back. It's not going to be overnight. It's going to take us a few years to get back.
Yeah.
But I promise you, Democrats will come back. And let me tell you why. Republicans cannot run government. And the reason they can't run government, they can't run it at state, county, city, or national level. And the reason they can't, their great mentor, Ronald Reagan, said government is the problem. In other words, their philosophy is they're against government. Well, how on earth can you make something work that you don't believe in? You can't
unless your secret goal is to actually tear it down.
And that's what they do. They tear it down. So that we'll be back in Alabama. Now I can't tell you when. It won't be tomorrow. It probably won't be next year. But we'll be back because they have in the 4 years, a little over 4 years, they've been in power in Montgomery. They've made a terrible damn mess. It's terrible.
Exactly.
And people didn't hear about all this budget crisis and the shutting down state parks, prisons in such a mess, education in such a mess. You didn't hear about all that when we Democrats were in charge. We handled the problem. They can't run government. They have made a god-awful mess in just 4 years. So they will help Democrats. Democrats don't have to do it all ourselves, but we've got to be organized enough as they present the opportunities to us, and they will. I promise you, they'll. We can't beat them by ourselves, but they're their own worst enemy, and they will help us defeat the Republicans because they can't manage. And so
exactly.
I just encourage Democrats everywhere, do not be disheartened. We'll be back because we have right on our side. We believe in helping people instead of always fighting. So
demonizing them.
You know, all of those these Republicans, I had a councilman the other day. I post on Facebook a lot, and I post strong Democrat stuff, and I point out these Republican shortcomings. And one of the councilmen the other day sent me a text, why was I always against Republicans? And I said, well, y'all do so many stupid things. And he said, what? And that was a great opening. I said, well, for instance, every one of you at every level, last election, your whole campaign was based on fight Obama, fight Obama. And that particular city is struggling to balance their budget. I said, now how is that helping you balance your budget now that y'all done this good job of fighting Obama? Same thing with the state of Alabama. All those legislators ran on a theme of fight Obama. Well, they're taking their eye off the ball. All they want to do is fight homosexuals. They want to fight Obama. They want to fight immigration. And none of that stuff really matters. You know, if you don't believe in homosexuality, don't be one. Yeah, if you don't,
and then
just don't
let God
be one.
Do the judging after that. Yeah, don't be one, and then let God handle it.
Yeah, just leave it alone. I mean, they're not bothering. It's really none of your business who who somebody else wants to marry. It's not any of your business. Stay out of other people's business. Stay out of the women's. Give women the right to choice. They shouldn't have to be. It shouldn't have to be given in this country. They have that right under the Constitution. We shouldn't be giving women nothing. They have that right. They've earned that right to make choices. And if they want to choose an abortion, abortion is a bad choice. But oftentimes, it could be the best of some bad choices. At least let people have choices.
That's what I tell people. It's about choices. That's for myself. I've always been against abortion, but I'm for a person making their own personal choice. It's not my choice.
I totally agree.
Personally,
with that.
If I had the choice, I wouldn't. But if a person, I'm not going to tell another person what they can do with their body. And I mean, they're always saying they're champions of liberty and all of this, but everything they do, they're trying to take people's personal liberty. And that's how I can understand.
You said it so well. You said it so well. It doesn't make sense. They claim that they're for people's right to make decisions and states' rights and all that. Well, what's the difference in that and letting and women making decisions and making their choices? They got a mixed message. It's just garbled, and consequently, they're a mixed up bunch. They just.
And I tell some of my friends, because I got Republican friends, and, you know, we talk politics sometimes, and I just tell them that, hey, I just pray for their base. I mean, every scandal they've come with about Obama, every scandal they're talking about Hillary Clinton, sent her through these investigations, they all come out clean. It just never stops. And it seems like their base has never woke up and said, hey, you've given us 20 scandals and nothing has panned out. but I guess you can give a person something to hate that's real passionate, and they'll forget about the important issues. Like you said, they've taken their eye off the ball and put their eye on Obama this, Obama that, or the poor. They shouldn't be poor. Let's drug test them if they're getting state money. What about the people down there getting state money? I don't think they should make people on welfare or Social Security or whatever take a drug test unless they're willing to take random drug tests themselves.
So, few states that have done that, they'll make the poor people take drug tests. They found out that the people who are on welfare, when they take drug tests, they test much lower for drugs than the general population. Florida was an example. The poor people ain't got the money to buy drugs. And why do people always want to pick on poor people? Let's pick on the rich people
And the same guy in Florida you're talking about, guess what he does? He institutes this drug testing policy down there in Florida, and guess what happens to him? He gets to D.C. and I guess gets caught up all in the high life society lifestyle, and he gets caught in a local drug busting trying to buy him something. And look at this thing with Dennis Hastert. I mean, they're always championing and fighting against something that they are intricately involved in themselves. That's the funny part of it. Everything they fight for is the main thing they're doing.
If they just do an inventory, the corruption of Republicans, just like last Friday, the judge that instructed the jury dead wrong in the Don Sigelman trial resigned. He was a habitual wife beater. And this man,
good riddance, Judge Mark Fuller.
He presided over convicting Don Sigelman. I was there. I saw it up close and personal. Don Sigelman did not break the law. What he did was not illegal. It wasn't then. It's not illegal now. He reappointed Richard Scrooge, who was the head of a Fortune 500 company at that time, multi-billion-dollar company. He reappointed him to the same board he'd been serving on for 12 or 15 years and been appointed to two or three other governors. I mean,
how dare he try to help education in Alabama? How dare he try?
That's right. But this corrupt judge that was appointed, he was from Dothan, a hot box of Republicans, and he sat there and swayed the jury and instructed the jury in such a way that they convicted Don Sigmund. He's serving 7 years for a crime that he did not commit. He did not break the law. I was there and up close and personal. This is a travesty, folks. It's wrong.
Yeah.
And if we let it happen to other folks, it can happen to us. They tried for 2.5 years to find something to convict me on, and they spent millions of dollars trying to convict me, another Democrat.
This is
Republican operation, it's just wrong.
They had you on their radar because they know the people. You had the pulse of the people, and as far as, you know, and I heard, you know, you heard the rumor mill and you heard the grassroots swell. People were wanting you to run for governor. So I think that's part of the reason also that you caught their attention, because they saw a grass swell, you know, grassroots movement, and people, you know, wanting you to come in, you know, to help the party out and maybe run for governor.
And
they saw that as a threat, they started to neutralize you.
Money. I raised a lot of campaign money. I'm a businessman, so the business community in Birmingham and across the state would write big checks for my campaign and for the other. I led the Democrats for the last 10 or 12 years that I was there. I was the face of the Democrat Senate, and there was no reluctance on the business community to write big campaign checks to me and the rest of the Democrats, because they knew that they could trust us and we'd do the right thing. And the Republicans saw that.
They wanted to knock me out as leading
the Democrats, because they knew that I cut into the business base of fundraising. That's where the Republicans always get their money, is from the business community. And now they have cut that off, and Democrats don't have a good source of money at this time because Republicans.
And you also pose a great threat with this historical writing that you did. I mean, like I said before, it stands as one of the greatest in American history, not just Alabama. It's definitely the greatest in Alabama, but it stands as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, in American history. And I think that played into it as well, because if a person can mount a grassroots write-in campaign like you did, I mean, to the power structure, especially the opposing power structure, that could pose a problem. I mean, you had the pulse of the business community, plus you already demonstrated, pull off a victory, even when you're not even supported by your own party. So that makes you a very political dangerous man. So, like I said, keep your lawyers on speed dial and stay in the fight. A lot of times when people get out of the fight, they think it's over. No, this Republican machine is going to keep on pushing until they get something. So don't never think that they're over, because they're always, like they say, the devil's work is never done. So, like I said, you posed a great threat to them just because of your ability, like you said, to raise campaign money from the business community and to motivate the grassroots, even the grassroots people that wasn't even in your electoral counties came out, and that's what I thought was amazing also, too. And for people that wasn't even in that election, they wrote your name in anyway. So that's very good right there. You got going for yourself, and I think part of that, along with what you said about the business, is what stroked them to say, hey, we might ought to try to check old Laurel Barron before he's too good out there. Let's try to, you know, throw some mud and see if it sticks. So I'm glad you're back in the fight.
I am back in the fight. Marcus, thank you for doing what you're doing with this blog. See, if everybody will do what you're doing in their way and use their talent, we've all got different talents. And this is a talent that you have, and thank God that you're doing this. This is the right thing. But we need to encourage everybody. It doesn't have to be done just like we're doing things here in DeKalb County. do it what fits your talent to help organize people and get people together. And thank you for doing what you're doing. Thank you for calling me.
Thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Thank you for your
encouragement. It really means a lot. And that's the second most important thing I've heard is your encouragement, along with some of the encouragement I got from Andrew Craig. You know, it has another great guy. You familiar with Andrew?
I am not. He's the one doing the Attica Spence thing.
No, that's another guy that's doing that.
I don't know Andrew.
Yeah, Andrew Craig's for the Justice Integrity Project, and he's one
of the ones who started. He's based in Washington, D.C. Okay.
And I'll send you a friend thing on Facebook, but he's with the Justice Integrity Project, and he's one of the leading people on the Don Siegelman case. And he's very good. He wrote the book Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And he wrote about it in his book how Obama, he can't do anything about the Siegelman situation, because when they do, it's going to expose just how dirty and corrupt the Justice Department is. So to them, to save face rather than do the right thing, they're going to save face and leave Don in there. Now, at the very last minute, he may get an Obama pardon. Then again, he may not.
Well,
because like I said, this involves the military industrial complex as well, because you look at the big contract that Judge Fuller got with Dallas Aviation. So, you know, so they may just let this thing ride and let this injustice to continue, because it's going to expose the Justice Department and it's going to expose the military industrial complex grants and contracts. So the Siegelman just might have to take one for the team, sort of say, for the Justice Department. But I think it's very bad, and one of the worst things I think has ever happened in Alabama.
In general, President Obama has done a good job, but I think his Justice Department is in shambles. They could have done many things to help us here in Alabama that they've not. I'm glad that the Attorney General has resigned and we've got somebody new in there, but I think Obama has missed the mark with his Justice Department. I don't like that Justice Department. I don't think they've got their eye on the right ball. Obama left Laura Canary as the U.S. attorney there in Montgomery District of 2 years after he got elected, and that's when she indicted all the folks that Bob Riley was against. That's Milton McGregor and Tom Coker and Bob Getty and all those people that had to spend millions and millions of dollars because Obama left Laura Canary in that office down there and indicted all those Democrats and the Democrat contributors. And Obama has some blame for that.
That's puzzling. And that's one of the things I talked about on one of my shows with Andrew Craig is I can't see how they let that happen. I mean, here's a popular person getting white and black votes, bringing in business, a champion for education, a Democrat, and then they just let the Republicans do what they wanted to with him. It seems like if you were a Democrat, especially president, that you would try to free this man and you'd have another chance at the South. I looked at it, and we talked about maybe some people, you know, even in the Democratic Party, saw Don Siegelman on the rise, and that's maybe why they weren't too eager to defend him, because they seen him as a rivalry, an inter-party rivalry, and they didn't want to see him ascend. I mean, here's a man coming there. He could have took a large part of the South, most likely, if he did take a shot at running for the president. So maybe we do have some Democrats who didn't want to see that as well.
Well, thank you so much. I've enjoyed chatting with you. You're a good man.
And you're
doing great,
come back
great
anytime.
And let's stay in touch, okay?
We definitely will, and I want to spread the word about what you're doing over there. That's very good, and I'm going to try to carry that on, what you're doing. And I appreciate
right,
you coming on the show, and you're welcome anytime. Thank you very much.
God bless you.
Senator Laura Barrett. Thank you.